Best Eye in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Behind the Black. This is the last week of the fundraising for Happy Birthday Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black. Your donations, your subscriptions, most generous, because we're going space engineering. This is where the money is. This is monetizing low Earth orbit and beyond. What's beyond that? Asteroids. Bob, a very good evening to you. Asteroid monetization. There have been dreams, but we're looking right now at a new document that you explicate. What is it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, I got in the email yesterday a new white paper report from a think tank, which was analyzing asteroid mining potential. And it had a graph in it that I thought was very telling, and I wanted to post that graph and describe what I think the potential is. Because even though asteroid mining is still in the future, and far future, in fact, not immediate future, and it probably will initially mostly serve as resources to the early colonies in space, eventually there's going to be an infrastructure strong enough to get those resources back to Earth. And this graph in this paper tells us the value of that material. And so I posted this graph on Behind the Black. What's significant about it is it focused on the metallic asteroids. These are the asteroids that are not made of the original primeval material of the solar system that's mostly carbon and soot. But these are materials that have hard metals in them, things like iron, cobalt, nickel, the rare earths, iridium, platinum, gold, those kind of things. And what's really significant is the amount of material. These abundances in these metallic asteroids exceed the entire abundance within the Earth's crust by many, many times. You could pull one asteroid out and probably match everything that's been mined in the entire history of the human race, from just one asteroid, in a metallic asteroid. And it's interesting that, like, for example, iron, it's almost, 20 times more material in the metallic asteroids than on the crust of the Earth. But gold, it's about the same ratio. In other words, everything that's been found in gold since the beginning of mining on Earth, the asteroids, metallic asteroids, have about the same amount. So it's not many times that amount. But you got to understand, there's a lot there. So, for example, the asteroid Psyche. It's estimated that there is 700 quintillion worth of gold and other precious metals within that asteroid, equivalent to about $93 billion for each person on Earth. Now, I have to note that the probe Psyche is presently on the way to the asteroid Psyche and will arrive in 2019. We're going to find out exactly how much of this valuable material is there. And I point out in the essay that a starship, we're going to eventually have the ability to bring this material back down to Earth, because Starship is demonstrating that we'll soon have very large reusable vehicles that can bring large payloads onto the ground. Starship has the potential to bring as much as 100 tons to the ground. That's about, somewhere around 3 million troy ounces in 100 tons. 3 million, some odd 3.5 million ounces. $2,000 an ounce these days, you do the math, we're talking about $5 to $7 billion at today's prices brought back by one Starship. Now, of course, that sudden influx of gold will cause the price to plummet. But even if it does drop by 90%, you've got $700 million of value that you brought back that easily pays for the flight. What's more important about this is that drop in price, because what it means is these resources are going to make everything cheaper and easier to accomplish. This is very similar to the situation when the old world discovered the new. It led to 500 years of burst of creativity and development unparalleled in history, because we suddenly had gigantic amounts of resources and land from the new world to the old, and as well as the new world developing at the same time. And that led to great things. And so this is the potential in space, without any question. The key is whether we can keep it free and allow private enterprise to prosper there, because if you do anything else, things will go sour. But the potential, John, is just astonishingly amazing.
Rocket Lab, this is space engineering challenging Blue Origin, not SpaceX, but Rocket Lab is to be taken very seriously. It's now come up with 4 service modules. For what? For what purpose, Bob?
This gets right to the asteroid mining, in a sense. Rocket Lab started as a rocket company. They have one small rocket called Electron. They're building another rocket called Neutron. They hope to launch this year, maybe early next year. Neutron will compete with SpaceX, mostly the Falcon 9. But they as a company, they've been very smart. They've expanded. They're not just simply making rockets. They've also been – they developed something called Photon, which is essentially an upper stage service module that can take payloads not only to the moon, it's done that once, but to Venus. They hope to do that on their own private Venus mission. And anything else. They've now announced 4 different service modules, a family of service modules designed to service different types of satellites and payloads from low orbit to geosynchronous to interplanetary. And this is getting back to the asteroid mining. They're developing a product line to serve multiple customers in space for doing many different things, including possibly demo missions, mining missions to other asteroids. So you want to build a mining facility to bring a sample back from an asteroid. You as a satellite company will only have to worry about the mining part. You'll be able to get a service module from Rocket Lab. Very smart business move, and it just indicates this company is strong and is going to grow, John.
March launch. Yes, that's obvious, straightforward now. Anything else significant about Boca Chica's activity?
There was an update on NASAspaceflight.com that I linked to on Behind the Black, because it outlines the work that's been going on at Boca Chica with Starship and Super Heavy. They have had 2 wet dress rehearsal countdowns, both of which got aborted. That doesn't mean they couldn't have launched in January. It just means that since they're being held up by the FAA, they are probably taking care to do additional tests and maybe make additional refinements that they might not have bothered to do if they didn't have to sit and wait. Will we have a March launch? Well, maybe. The FAA still hasn't issued that launch license, and it's demanding actions by SpaceX. It could be the reason why these dress rehearsals aborted. It could very well be that that a March launch is possibly threatened at this point, John, partly because SpaceX has to do greater due diligence to meet the FAA's requirements and probably decides it might as well. So we have to wait and see. I don't know when a launch is going to happen here now, John.
I'd forgotten about Starliner. Should I remember about it?
Yes, absolutely. Starliner is now scheduled for a late April liftoff. That's about 2 weeks later than they were saying about 2 months ago. But that's not a significant delay. And delays like that are usually related to scheduling issues at ISS, trying to rearrange the many things going to and from the station to make them not get in each other's way. But part of the reason it's probably true is because ULA has begun stacking the Atlas V rocket for launching that first manned mission, the Starliner, in late April. The rocket is all now at the Cape. They're starting to put the pieces together, integrating the upper and lower stages, as well as Starliner itself. And so hopefully it's going to launch late April with 2 astronauts, NASA astronauts on board, and will stay at ISS for 1 to 2 weeks. If that mission finally happens, SpaceX will actually have a competitor in the manned tourism space business. Of course, they got to convince people to get on Starliner and all the problems Boeing's has had. Do you want to get on a Yugo to go to Mars? I'm not so sure people will want to, but at least we'll have a competitor, John, and that's a good thing.
Counterfactual, Bob. Without SpaceX, Starliner is our world, and how disappointing that is.
And you have to go back to when they first issued these contracts. NASA was gung-ho for Boeing. That's the company that's going to make it happen. SpaceX, we don't trust them. We got to watch everything they do. They're really not safe. And, of course, Boeing right now, NASA won't even take bids from it on contracts. It's so disgusted with its operation. So, yes, we'd be in a sad state with just Boeing.
Let's go to Northrop Grumman. Layoffs, why?
Northrop Grumman is going to do about a layoff of about 1,000 employees at its California facility. That's about 14% of the workforce at that location. We don't know why the cuts. It's in the space division. It could be related to a major cancellation of a contract from the Space Force 2 weeks ago. Space Force had issued contracts to Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin to build each build half of a 72 satellite constellation for communications for the military. they canceled the Boeing contract of almost $750 million out of nowhere, citing cost overruns and schedule delays. They didn't say anything more than that. There are also problems with Northrop Grumman's contract with NASA for the habitable module on the Lunar Gateway station. They're having problems there. They've had it's a fixed price contract, and Northrop Grumman has had to take write-offs because it's over budget. It's interesting to me that Northrop Grumman is having serious problems here. They purchased Orbital ATK to provide them an Antares rocket. That also has given them problems. It could be Northrop Grumman's rethinking its space industry here, John.
Astra's Rocket 4, you've got a photograph linked, a link to the Astra Rocket 4, but it's for sale. Actually, they're giving it away at 50 cents a share. What happened?
This company had a rocket operational, but it had lots of problems. It was very small. So about a year and a half ago, the company decided that rocket's not going to make us money, so we're going to shut that rocket down and develop a rocket number 4, a bigger rocket. But they've had lots and lots of cash flow problems, and essentially the company is on the verge of bankruptcy right now. Stock prices is about $1.50 to $2 right now per share. But the two founders of the startup in November offered to buy the company and take it private. And at the time, they offered $1.50 per share. Well, they've now retracted that offer and instead are offering to buy the company at a price of 50 cents per share, which is about a third of what it's now available at still. Why is that the case? They give a lot of reasons, but what it really tells us is that Astra as a company itself is in real trouble, that even the founders willing to buy it aren't willing to pay very much for it. This is capitalism. Some companies succeed, some companies fail. Astra still could survive, but right now I would put it in the failure column, John.
Well, it's a very pretty rocket. Did they ever test the rocket number 4?
Rocket number 4, no, it doesn't exist. Rocket number 4, they might have some hardware under construction, but that rocket's never even come close to launching. It's not even close. When they abandoned 3, they figured it would be at least 2 to 3 years before 4 would fly, and that was about a year and a half ago, and they haven't really moved forward.
In 1915, there were a lot of trucks built in the Midwest barns. Yeah. They didn't come to anything until General Motors went around and bought them all up, so things happen. We're going to a mystery. It's a return of a mystery. It's the unsolved Agatha Christie of low Earth orbit. Russia and the ISS and leaking. Have we settled it, Bob, that the Russians drill holes or what the Russians' equipment is too old? We've got all these stories all confused, and invariably Roscosmos is at the center of it.
Yeah, in this case, this is not having to do with holes being drilled, we don't think, or failures of Soyuz or Progress capsules. This has to do with ISS itself and the second oldest module on ISS called Zvezda. Zvezda, unlike the oldest module, which is really just the hub of the whole station, no one docks to it, it just sits there in the center of the station. This second oldest module has been used as a major docking port by the Russians now for more than 2 decades. There's been more than almost something like 3 dozen dockings to it over the years. And when the leak appeared, it was revealed that the leaks were probably coming from stress fractures in the hull of Zvezda. And so they associated this was possibly stress from the dockings. They patched a lot of those holes, got the leak reduced significantly, so it's not really a threat to the station. But they then and suspended docking for about 2 years. But it appears this year they started to dock with Zvezda again. And lo and behold, NASA and Roscosmos have admitted that the leaks of air from ISS has now increased the rate of loss. It's not a lot. It's not a threat to anyone on the station. But that once again raises the question, why are they using the Zvezda docking port if this module has stress fractures that are causing leaks? This is the hull of the module. You do not want that module to crack and break. So I have to question why they're docking with it again, even if that leak is under control, John.
Bob Zimmerman, Behind the Black, the last week of the happy birthday fundraising for Bob Zimmerman. Your donations and subscriptions generous. We're headed to exploring. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.